SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go. Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
New South Wales' only medically supervised injecting centre is calling for urgent legal reform to allow more sites to open across the state. It's been 25 years since the centre opened in Sydney's King's Cross, becoming the first supervised injecting facility in the Southern Hemisphere. Staff have since supervised more than 1.3 million injections, managed more than 12,000 overdoses without a single death, and made more than 25,000 referrals for treatment and care. For more, SBS spoke with the centre's medical director, Dr. Marianne Jauncey.
So 25 years ago when we opened our door, we have to remember that at that point there was no service of our kind, not only in Australia or the Southern Hemisphere, there was none in the English-speaking world. So this was a really big deal back then. And we opened in the context of a very desperate situation in and around King's Cross, where there was an awful lot of heroin that was being bought and sold and used on the streets of King's Cross. There was a lot of public injecting. There was a lot of needles in the street. There was a lot of overdose and ambulance sirens. And tragically, there was a lot of people dying. It really was ground zero when we were talking about the heroin epidemic of the late 1990s. So that led to the drug summit under Bob Carr in 1999. And one of many recommendations that came out of that summit, which in many ways was quite a seismic event for drug and alcohol policy in this state, was a recommendation about trialling a supervised injecting facility.
For anyone who hasn't actually heard of a safe injecting room, what services are provided there and what does it aim to do?
So at its very most basic fundamental reason for being, our service wants to stop people dying of drug overdose. In and around the streets of King's Cross before we opened, an ambulance on average was being called every 12 hours around the clock, 52 weeks a year, to a heroin overdose. That doesn't happen anymore. When our service opened, again, the first of its kind in the country, we allowed people in who were known to be someone who was injecting drugs. They are coming with pre-purchased, pre-obtained substances. And then rather than just giving them the needles and telling them to go away, we have a piece of legislation that allows us to legally operate and say, you are welcome here because your life matters. And so people use the drugs within our building. And that was the key crucial new thing that was enacted under the Bob Carr government of 2001 when we first opened. The very first time that rather than just giving a needle, we said, we are not forcing your way into the shadows. So people come with their drugs. They register with the service. We've got a bunch of nurses, paramedics, counsellors, social workers that work on our front line, including people with lived experience. And they come in, they tell us what they're using, they go through and they not only get the clean injecting equipment, that's not the unusual bit, but then we say, pick a booth. You know, you're welcome here and you're welcome as you are. We're not going to pretend that you're not using. We are openly acknowledging what's happening with the needles that are being provided with government money, and we're sending a very clear message that your life is important and that you're important. So people use the drugs within our service. They then go through to the next stage, the next room, which is what we call the aftercare area, where people can sit and spend some time, get some tea and coffee, have some food, chat. They might go and have a, you know, debrief, have a natter with a counsellor, talk to one of the staff. Sometimes it's just about what's happening in their day. But over time, we develop relationships and it's all about connecting with people. And once you've got that sense of trust and what we would call a therapeutic relationship, what we know is that then you know, it isn't actually much fun living on the street and being dependent on heroin. And so our job as healthcare workers is to really try and work with people to see how we might best be able to assist them.
Do you find there is still a lot of stigma and judgment directed at people who inject drugs? And what does the injecting centre do to tackle this?
There is an absolutely enormous amount of stigma, of discrimination, of fear and sometimes loathing directed at people who use drugs. And I'm struck by the hypocrisy, because in our country, in Australia, it's almost, you know, unpatriotic if you don't drink alcohol, which is a psychoactive substance that changes the way you think, feel and act. And nobody is frightened by that or twice if somebody has a beer or a glass of red wine. And I'm, you know, I have no judgment about that, but it is sort of part of our culture and our way of life. And people use alcohol because of the fact that it is a drug and it changes the way you think, feel and act. But the judgment that we instinctively feel if somebody uses a different psychoactive substance, if they use MDMA, cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, psilocybin, whatever it is. And I totally understand that instinctive emotional response, which is largely brought about because of what we're kind of unconsciously taught from a very young age, and these messages that we hear in the media and the conversations and everyday narrative that drugs are bad and people who use drugs are bad. But I suppose, you know, for me, I've had the privilege of working alongside people who use and inject drugs for decades, and it's really helped me see that this is really a very unhelpful narrative, and people are just people with 1,000 stories to tell and 1,000 reasons that they ended up using and dependent on drugs in the first place. And so for me, as a doctor, as a healthcare worker, I mean, as a human, really, I have learnt the benefit of suspending judgment and, you know, welcoming somebody exactly as they are, which is what our staff do just beautifully every single day at the supervised injecting facility. Because, you know, what we've learned is that it's actually in acceptance and in removing the judgment and the stigma that you create a space for transformation and for change. I think people think we have to tell them they must not do that. We have to, you know, tut, tut, tut and tell them they shouldn't and tell them they have to get off, as if somehow that's going to make it easier for them. Actually, what we know is it makes it harder. It makes it harder for them to put up their hand and ask for help. It makes them ashamed of what they do. It makes them shrink away from having open and honest conversations, and it makes them shrink away from healthcare services who are trying to help and support them. And so, you know, Uniting, which is the organisation that runs us, that runs the supervised injecting facility, have a, you know, a whole campaign about wanting us to have an open and honest conversation about drugs themselves, about people who use them, and, you know, understanding that perhaps the way we've unconsciously thought about things doesn't have to be the way we continue to think and talk about things. That change is possible.
And can you tell me about the impact the centre has had since it was opened, what, a quarter of a century ago? What are some of the impacts in that time?
Yeah, it's almost hard to sort of put it into a 3-second grab. I mean, I can give you the statistics. We know that we've had nearly 19,000 individuals who've registered with the service. We know that we've had nearly 12,500 overdoses that have happened where our staff have been able to respond, recognise and intervene. We know that there has never been a single death, because overdose death is totally preventable if it occurs when somebody is present that can recognise and respond appropriately. And we know that we've had over 25,000 referrals into various forms of treatment and care. And these are referrals that might not have happened were it not for our service. Sometimes people say that, you know, we send the wrong message, that drug use is somehow okay. I think the message we're trying to send is that you are okay, you are worthy and whole and complete, and we don't want you to die. You know, we know that the government is acknowledging injecting drug use by providing the clean injecting equipment. So to turn around and shrink from providing the physical space where it can happen, is short-sighted at best.
From what I understand, the Uniting Safe Injecting Room is the only one in New South Wales. Why is it the only one?
So we operated as a trial for nearly a decade, which meant that the piece of legislation that allows us to legally open and operate always had an end date. And it wasn't until 2010 that that was finally overturned. But when that legislation was introduced in Parliament back then, under the Premier Christina Keneally, and, you know, she talked about the successes of the centre and how nobody wanted to go back to the situation we had before the service was opened, there was also a political reality that in the lead up to a state election that they didn't want the narrative to be, well, when's the next one opening up here and there and everywhere? And so they introduced to our enabling legislation a restriction. And it says that while you are able to operate this service at 66 Darlinghurst Road in King's Cross, you must be the only one. And so part of our enabling legislation also has a restriction, and it says no other services are allowed to open across the state. And so unless we have an Act of Parliament passed through New South Wales Parliament House, even if I do the same thing as the director of the service, I provide the same services with the same people and the same equipment in exactly the same way, using exactly the same protocols, if I did all of that, which wins awards and, you know, we were given keys to the city for our, you know, for our work, if we did it all in a different building or a different part of New South Wales, even a different part of Sydney, everybody would be at risk of arrest. So I think what we're saying now, after 25 years of operation, given that this morning in Parliament House, our Premier spoke to a large group of people on the event of our birthday and absolutely acknowledged, and I quote, the unmitigated success of our service, my response is, why is it that there can only be one? Surely that is time to change. You know, Australia actually has a long and very proud history of harm reduction as part of our national policy, where we acknowledge that people are using drugs and we provide them with clean injecting equipment, new needles, in order that they don't get or transfer bloodborne viruses like hepatitis C and HIV. And so for decades, we've actually been giving people needles. But I think what people don't quite realise is, of all of those millions of syringes that we give out every year, the law then demands that we send people away into the shadows. Now, as a doctor, what I can tell you is that if I'm present when somebody uses, and I don't have to be a doctor, anyone that's trained to recognise and respond to an opiate overdose can stop someone dying. So our laws, based in public health evidence, tell the staff of New South Wales Health Services to provide injecting equipment, but then apparently our duty of care stops. We give them the equipment because we don't want to cause an HIV epidemic, but then we send them away. And so I suppose what I've learned in the, you know, nearly 30 years now since I first started working in King's Cross is that, in my view, this is really a failure in our duty of care. And if we care enough to stop them catching or transmitting a bloodborne virus, we really should care enough to make sure they themselves are kept safe as well. So there's been coronial investigations into deaths in public hospital toilets, some of which are overdose deaths. And one of the recommendations from years ago was, you know, this was a coronial investigation that looked at Liverpool Hospital. And one of the clear recommendations in the coronial investigation to government was that there needs to be consideration of a supervised injecting facility in that particular area. It was ignored and turned down. We have the Special Commission of Inquiry into the drug ICE put together because of New South Wales government and the Premier at the time, Gladys Berejiklian. And one of the recommendations from that process was very clearly that the service and the state needs to be available to provide more and different and expanded access to supervised injecting facilities. Again, ignored by government. The drug summit that we had just at the end of 2024, one of the clear recommendations out of that was there needs to be the capacity across the state for more access to supervised injecting facilities. And it just never happens. And so at 25 years of successful service operation, and as per the Premier's exact words, an unmitigated success, it does not feel right or fair that we still have a legislative restriction preventing any other services from doing the same life-saving work that we do every day.
Did you know that distance and physical barriers, especially common in larger or multi-story homes, can reduce the strength of your Wi-Fi signal and slow down your internet? For setup tips on how to get the best out of your NBN connection, visit nbn.com.au/checkyoursetup.